Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from Moana.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Live with Barney.
If everyone was doing a great job, then everyone would win the championship every year.
Peter.
It's not kidding the candles all the time, guys.
Reed.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
And DJ Rouché.
The baddest DJ in the land.
It's The Net Live right now.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. It is The Net Live right now. I am your intrepid host, Kevin Barnett, sitting in here in the home court in what is considered by Southern California standards to be a chilly day. Only going to top out around 60. We're freezing here in the beach area, down in the middle 40s during the morning. But we're glad you've chosen to join us here on this wonderful Monday morning to talk about some volleyball. I am holding down the home court. DJ Rouché is in Turks and Caicos. I'm sure having a grand time. Chris Geeter McGee has gone to his first day of school for his orientation for the Fox Sports Network, so he is otherwise occupied. And Reed Pretty, he's training for a little thing called the World Cup, which is a qualifier for a little event you might have heard of called the Olympics. So that leaves me to sit here in the home court and hold it down. And we've invited in an old friend who's hosted before, a guy who's been here many times, and you hear him each week on the College Volleyball Weekly, Brandon Rosenthal.
What's up, man?
Thanks for sitting in, Brandon. We appreciate it. We've got a big show planned. We're glad you're here for it. We've got lots of topics to cover, a couple of great guests. Let's give you the rundown right now. Got a couple of unfortunate incidents that we're going to be touching on a little bit. Of course, most of you in the volleyball world heard by now, if you follow Division I volleyball, that Lauren Cook, the coach's daughter, arrested last week for a hit and run. We'll talk about that situation there. That was happening and coming out just as we were on air last week. And also Penn State. Big issue with Penn State, going to dominate the world of sports until something more distracting or bigger happens. Some horrible allegations going on there with an assistant coach in the Penn State football program, mind you, not the volleyball program. But we'll touch on that situation a little bit and kind of relate it back to volleyball. FIVB Phuket. I'm not sure anyone cares, but it did, in fact, happen this past weekend. We'll talk about it briefly. Women's World Cup going on. Newsflash, the USA women are pretty darn good. And we'll talk about them, and they're a fantastic start in that event, and it is ongoing right now. You can catch it on Universal Sports if you want to see some of these matches. The United States women already 3 matches into the 11-match schedule. And a couple of great guests coming on here. Chris Poole, head coach at Florida State. Been there since 2008, and he has put together an incredible record. His team has achieved things that they never thought were possible under his short tenure here. We're going to have Chris on the show to talk about his program and also talk about RPI. A lot of talk out there about the RPI. Is it a good ranking of the schools, the schedules? Is it accurate? We'll talk to Chris about some of the math behind the RPI. And then we have Rich Kern. Rich Kern also, talk about richkern.com. Brandon, give our listeners a little overview as to what richkern.com is.
Rich Kern, actually, is .net. I hate to inform you of that.
It's .com, and I found it anyway. So even if you search .com, no, it says .com, richkern.com.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe about the .com since I've used it. You know, I use it every day,
what,
actually.
A minute ago?
Exactly. No,
wait,
Rich Kern is a
your memory. Okay.
Yeah. It's the premier volleyball website as far as just kind of information, score updates. It gives a lot of information as far as just the news of college volleyball. It's a tremendous site. It's something that I know Rich works really hard at. You know, probably about 8 years ago, I was tipped off on it, and I thank Rich all the time because it's one of those sites where I can always go to and get the answer for.
you were tipped off 8 years ago, but it took you a long time to find it because you were looking for .NET.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we're going to have Rich on here to talk about his site, what he provides, but also to talk about RPI. So this, if you want to know about the RPI, this is the show for you. We'll talk all about it. Brandon, what's been going on down there at Lipscomb? We had an update a couple weeks ago on you guys having a big match, big victory over Louisville. And
we did.
Yeah,
we beat the Cardinals, and then kind of we won that weekend. And then we had our first loss in 3 years, 44 conference matches, snapped at the hands of our neighbors down the road at Belmont, and it was a tough loss at their place at 4. But we've rebounded, and we've got our last weekend of conference play this weekend with a one match lead for the regular season title. So. Girls are working hard, and, you know, we're excited.
Your tournament coming up, of course, next week. I'm going to be down there doing a little emceeing for your championship banquet. What do you think your chances are of going to another NCAA tournament?
You know, I've said all year, you know, that we've recruited the girls that I thought we needed to win a championship. And, you know, although we lost 5 seniors last year, I thought we were in the running to you know, win another one. So I'll stand by that. I feel real strong. This will be the first time we've hosted. And, you know, I like what we've done all year. We kind of hit a little bump in the road this past couple weeks. But, you know, I think as you see around the country, sometimes that's good. And, you know, got our girls refocused and, you know, playing again, you know, pretty good volleyball, so I'm excited about it. And I'm also excited to have you here and get you some boiled peanuts and all the fried food you could ever want, and you're kind of reconnecting with your heritage.
I'm going to need some barbecue, definitely some pulled pork sandwiches. That's reconnecting with something I would have in Illinois for sure.
Done. I'm going to take you to a place called Judge Bean's Barbecue, and they have the best. I'm saying this, you know, I've eaten a lot of tacos from California to Mexico, okay, all over the country. The best taco is a catfish taco. No joke. I know it sounds weird. People are going, whoa, what's going on? Don't believe it. Next week when you come in, we're going to do it. All you can eat tacos.
Beans. Judge Beans. Catfish tacos, yep. Nashville. All right, that's the recommendation. I'll let you know how it is after next week. Couple weeks away. We also will have College Volleyball Weekly as planned. Brandon, of course, on the line, and we will have Mike Sondheimer and Holly McPeak checking in, talk about all the action that went on. There was all kinds of crazy stuff, as per usual, this season with the women's college volleyball scene. Brandon, looking down the RPI here, you're number 82. With all the RPI talk we're doing on this show, you feel like that's a justified number?
Yeah, I feel like it's a good number. You know, I think it's, you know, the RPI is a tricky formula, and I think Chris Poole will kind of explain it a little bit better. I think you've got two styles of coaches, those coaches that you know, are going to schedule RPI-wise, and then those coaches that are obviously going to schedule tough but don't necessarily delve too much into, you know, the actual mathematics of it. So it's a, you know, it's a tricky situation, but 82 I think is a good number. We're, you know, trying to bump up there a little bit more before the tournament, but we know that we've got to win our tournament to get into the to the NCAA tournament.
Brandon, Matt Gardhoff on the chat board wants to know how you feel about the number 4.
That's right, and I see the 4 pulled pork sandwiches in an hour. You know, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. I am hooked on man versus food. Hooked.
Okay. Yeah.
And Adam Richman, I need to follow this guy around. I don't think I could eat as much as he can.
You want to?
I'm not
going to
throw that out. I do. I mean, and you know, some of these challenges are pretty close to the 4 double doubles. I'm not saying they're there, but they're pretty close to the 4 double doubles. And if I had the training he did, and I know he's not a competitive eater, but I think I could hang with him. But some of that stuff is just amazing what that guy can sustain.
Worth noting, Brandon Rosenthal tried to eat 4 double doubles inside of 20 minutes and keep it down. He did in fact eat 4 double doubles, and then things ended badly for him, throwing up all over the sidewalk and bushes out there just north of Los Angeles International Airport.
Why do you always have to bring up that part?
It's part of the deal. People want, you know, they were excited about the poster that Matt Gardhoff made, you and your In-N-Out hat and the four burgers and 1,500 grams of sodium. And people were excited, but then they have to know the result. You can't just get excited about something and then not know what happened. It's kind of like LSU-Alabama. You get excited about it all week, but then you have to know the result.
What a match. What a game. What did you think?
I thought it was boring, actually. I watched the first half and then half the second half, and it was okay. I missed the end of it because I was into some family stuff. Had to come back for the score at afterwards. But I just felt neither team could really get going, any sort of sustained drive. And then, of course, Alabama missing all those field goals wasn't good.
Right. And I thought, you know, here's the one thing. The defense was pretty good. I mean, it's hard to talk about the game without talking about the defense. Because you missed it, because you went away and did some other stuff, it's crazy to think that a penalty in overtime for Alabama, 12 men in the huddle, basically cost them the game.
And put them down in third place spot, so it may have cost them a shot at the national championship.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Oklahoma State yet. I think they still got work to do, and I'm just not, I don't know. I think it's going to be a rematch.
Well, unfortunately, unlike women's college volleyball, which I like all the parity, I like the back and forth, and we will eventually get a champion with football. Of course, you won't get an actual champion. You'll get this theoretical championship game where they'll add them up and say, all right, we'll just give you these two teams. And looking at the scores from this week and people going up, going down, Illinois losing to Purdue, some of the things that are happening in the volleyball world, it's interesting and good to know that behind all of these different events, behind Illinois going to number one, back down to number five, it's not going to matter for Illinois. They're going to make the tournament. We're going to get to see how good they are come playoff time, and they're going to get a shot at a national championship. And I think that's the way it ought to be in all the college sports, instead of having this random entity controlling what's happening with the championship in college sports, if it truly is a championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's neat, too, you know. I mean, I think I know your opinion on this, but the idea that other teams are getting to share in that number one spot and promote that for their school, and, you know, it really does matter. I know there's going to be people out there that argue, oh, it does, the regular season doesn't matter. It does. And, you know, I think, like you said, that parity is fun. You know, to be able to go and play one versus two, or going to be able to play the top 10 schools and things like that, you know, every week, you know, we've seen more this year than any year is that ability for teams to, you know, playing at home is huge anymore, and getting the wins at home. So, you know, not only that, the flip side of it is if you do go out on the road and get a good W on the road, that becomes even bigger, you know. So I think it's tremendous, you know, and I think it's great for college athletics.
Well, we know that the women's volleyball scene is definitely healthy. But let's get back to the discussion we've had for the last couple of weeks talking about the NCAA and some of the changes going on the NCAA. Of course, the NCAA approving a $2,000 scholarship bonus to offset some of the costs not covered by a full scholarship for some athletes. And it's going to be on a per-school basis. They're going to have a choice to make that. But this signals, in some people's opinion, the beginning of the end for the NCAA, that they've now opened the door to paying above and beyond the scholarship. And we had a great email sent this week by one of the listeners to a Grantland article, the beginning of the end for the NCAA. And this was interesting, talking about how they finally opened that door and relating it back to baseball and Bill Veeck, who owned the Chicago White Sox for some time and was a real innovator in some of the minor leagues with some of the promotions that he did, and his opposition to the free agent system at the time, which was very similar to the indentured servitude that NCAA athletes are under. It was very similar in the pros. And when that began to change just a little bit, all of a sudden it was one big swoop that finished it, and it took baseball a long time to adjust, rather than baseball having been flexible and started to adopt some changes. The NCAA, it seems like, is on the same path, where they're going to fight it and fight it and fight it until it is completely unsustainable, and you're going to see massive change. So there was a good note in here, though, in this article, and we'll try and get this up on the Facebook page. There's a good note in here that we hadn't even talked about. We talked about the $717 million that the NCAA made just this year. Just this year they're going to get from the basketball tournament and the rights fees there. But we didn't even talk about the fact that the Southeastern Conference made over $1 billion last year. The Big Ten made $905 million last year. Last year. These are other entities. And this isn't even taking into account some of the other big conferences that are out there, making hundreds of millions, close to $1 billion each, off of the backs of athletes who are, let's be honest here, unpaid. Your scholarship, especially if you're in-state, but even give them the out-of-state number. We'll give you the out-of-state number. We'll even give you a private school number. We'll say it's $40,000. And we're talking about a small number of athletes here. $40,000 backed against probably close to 10 organizations, or at least three that we know of, the NCAA, the Big Ten, and the Southeast Conference, the SEC, making nearly $1 billion each. If you add it all up, it's about 2.5 or something close to that. $2.5 billion compared to, at the outside estimate, $40K. That's not exactly equitable. That's why you start hearing things like slavery thrown around, indentured servitude, ownership, plantation. This is why you start to hear all those things, because we're not talking about a small amount of profit. But we are talking about a small amount of athletes that are providing that. Nonetheless, this spells some huge changes, I think, for the NCAA upcoming. And I've been talking to people in the volleyball world, including the AVCA. It spells some potentially huge and bad changes for NCAA volleyball. And Brandon, this is a point that was brought up, said that a lot of sports like volleyball, certainly men's volleyball, but even women's volleyball, which has a much larger following, much better level of support, is going to face perhaps some severe budget cuts based on the money that's going to end up getting paid out to football and basketball athletes.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of questions out there. I mean, I think what's going to happen is, here's a couple things you got to take into account when it comes to this extra money. You know, any football school is going to have it, you know, I mean, given to the football athletes, basketball athletes. So, you know, there is going to be opportunity for the female athletes just because of Title IX issues. So when you start to look around and you say, hey, you know, what teams, you know, probably the first team that's going to be taken care of is women's basketball. And then you kind of get into this next, you know, realm, you know, where's, what's that next sport and kind of that hierarchy.
I'm sorry? Volleyball, doesn't it? It's not soccer. It's not softball.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the three that are in contention, you know, are probably women's softball, soccer, and volleyball. With an outside, you know, sport is track just because of the number-wise, but I think it's going to be one of those three. And, you know, I'm in volleyball, so, you know, I see it. You know, softball is getting a lot of TV time in the spring, but I still just don't see it as that sport. You know, you would venture to think that it is volleyball. And even with those numbers, those still don't come close to the numbers that you need to keep it somewhat equitable, you know, when you take into consideration football and men's basketball.
How do you mean?
So
keep it equitable.
Well, I mean, just in theory, you know, the whole Title IX thing gets a little confusing. You know, people think that it's sport for sport, so if you give something to men's basketball, you have to give it for women's basketball. But, you know, it's kind of a working thing, whereas, you know, it's in conjunction to the student population at your school. So, for instance, if you have a female-dominated school,
which many schools
you should
do.
Right. I was going to say typically. So I guess what I'm saying is, because this is probably mostly geared towards football and men's basketball, it will benefit the female sports because of your Title IX issue. So I think volleyball is going to benefit from it. I really do. And I've thought about this a lot. You know, here's my question, and there's a lot of them out there right now just because this just came out over the past couple of weeks, is I think it's going to be turned into a sort of a recruiting war, because you're basically going to be able to offer something that maybe another school can't.
Payment.
So I think, yeah. And so now all of a sudden, you know, let's say I'm recruiting your daughter and we don't, you know, we don't have that available, and another school does. I mean, that's, you know, $8,000. You know, in your pocket or in your daughter's pocket over her time. That, I mean, that definitely, you know, is going to help, you know, schools.
Well, for me, too, the interesting thing is the NCAA had a recommendation from a nonpartisan panel that said that the actual costs were, I think it was $3,250 or $3,400, something close to that. And the NCAA instead, in the way that they normally do, just came up with an arbitrary number, $2,000, here's what we think, and we're going to do this. To me, that's just further example of the ego of the NCAA. They don't think they have to change. They don't think anything's wrong with the system. And their way of acknowledging the massive media attention that they're getting, negative media attention that they're getting for the money they're making, is to throw out $2,000.
So you don't like the number at all?
No, I don't think it's a good number. I don't think
what
it comes close
suggest?
To solving the problem. Well, I think you need to cover the actual cost. And if a nonpartisan panel studies it and says, hey, it's $3,500, don't give out $2,000. Okay?
Okay.
If it's $3,400, then pay $3,400, whatever it is, $3,200, $3,400. Call it $3,500 right now just for even sake here. $3,500. Then put out $3,500. Don't put out $2,000. You know, if those are the costs, somebody who does not have a horse in the race says it is, then accept that. Don't do some separate independent study to try and benefit yourself. Because even at that level, $3,500, and they do the math, and oh, it's this many millions of dollars each year that we're putting out, and it's going to affect these other programs, and this, they can go and shift the math however they want. I don't like that at all. I don't think it's enough to cover the actual other costs, especially when you're preventing scholarship athletes from working. You're telling them they can't work, yet you're not paying them enough money. So that right away to me is wrong. Secondarily, when you're talking about the superstar athletes in college, you're talking about uniform sales, memorabilia sales, things that have their number on it. Everyone knows whose number that is. Everyone knows why that particular jersey sells in the school bookstore. Go to any big school. Basketball uniforms, football uniforms, everyone knows whose jersey that is, even though it doesn't have the name on it. That needs to be put in, some percentage of that needs to be put into a trust fund for that kid, because that kid is generating income for the university directly by the use of his image. And certainly if you would like to use that person's image in a video game, or if you'd like to use that person's image in your promotional materials following their time in college, you better pay for it. Everyone else in the world has to pay licensing fees for the content that they use, except the NCAA.
You know what I thought was interesting as far as the article in The Atlantic was who is a part of this pretty big lawsuit going on was Bill Russell. You know?
Yeah, Bill Russell just joined it, correct.
I thought that, you know, we're not talking about somebody that, you know, is just an average Joe. I mean, we're talking about arguably one of the greatest, you know, basketball players of all time and is still kind of fighting it. And I think that's interesting that, you know, somebody's saying, hey, you know, enough is enough. You know, the whole thing is interesting because you don't want the NCAA to go away. I don't think that that's the answer, and I think that, you know, as we kind of keep pushing for, you know, there's these huge, you know, people are making big statements, oh, we'll break out on our own and things like that. I don't think we want that. You know, I think, especially for volleyball, I think the NCAA has done tremendous stuff. I think,
yeah,
albeit they can do a lot more, okay, but that's, I think, kind of the unknown frontier out there is what happens if, you know, we kind of get what we want, and all of a sudden, everybody's doing things on their own.
I'll tell you what I want is an acknowledgement of the truth. That's what I want from the NCAA, and then dealing with the realities in a reasonable manner. It seems to me they refuse to acknowledge the fact that they are all about profit. the things they do are about profit. They continue to say that they're about the athletes, but no, college sports is not about the athletes in these two sports we're talking about. It's about money. And
yeah,
then it's about money about all the other sports because it's not about the money it makes, it's about the money it spends. So stop telling me it's not about the money.
It's interesting you said that, you know, in conjunction with this LSU-Alabama game. I mean, you think about it. Most pro stadiums seat somewhere between 60 to 70,000.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're talking about, especially in the SEC, you know, obviously we're, you know, near where I live and, you know, I've experienced it firsthand. They are putting 100 to 110,000 people on average in these stadiums. And I mean, it's amazing. It's one of those things I didn't believe it until I saw it. I went to the University of Tennessee versus Florida back in the heyday when both of the programs were very good. My wife, her family had been fans, and you know, I told her, I said, "Look, I've been to a lot of sporting events, and you're pretty, you know, you're pumping this pretty hard." And I mean, no joke. It was 110,000 people in the stadium, and probably another 50,000, you know, just tailgating alone. It was amazing to me.
Yeah, so, it's absolutely amazing. When they showed the aerial shot of that game, as I was watching it in the first half, they showed an aerial shot, and I just thought to myself, can you imagine the money that was made on that one night or during that one day in that area by the university, by the stadium, by the vendors, by everyone associated with that game? Can you imagine the money that was made there? And the 200 athletes or whatever it is between the two football teams that provided the entertainment, made it all possible, is the only reason that any of that shenanigans even exists, didn't get a cut of that. Or if they did, if you want to do the math down some way, got a very tiny, tiny piece of what that of that revenue that was generated just in that one weekend. Forget the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think when you start throwing the word billion around, I think people understood the SEC and the other conferences, the big conferences, make a lot of money. I think they understood that. But I think what catches your attention is, especially in today's day and age and the recession or whatever you want to call we're in right now, when you start throwing the word billion around, again, I'm involved with college athletics, so I see it every day, but when you start throwing the word billion around, it catches my attention. So if it catches my attention, it's got to catch other people's attention or the average Joe who's paying, you know, gosh, I don't know, $300-$400 to go to the game, and you start to put those numbers together. I mean, it's truly amazing.
I know it's caught the attention of some of our listeners. We've had some good emails at thenetlive@gmail.com. We've also had some good interaction this week on facebook.com/thenetlive. Get out there, like us on Facebook, send us an email. And if you want to call during the show, 347-677-1525 is the number. On the other side of the break, we're going to have Chris Poole from Florida State. It's Kevin Barnett sitting in along with Brandon Rosenthal. You're listening to Net Live. More to come. Hang in there.
As the ABC season draws closer, it continues to be the place where the stars of volleyball connect. On December 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern, San Antonio's Alamo Dome will light up as the top 24 seniors of girls' high school volleyball will take the court in the 2011 Under Armour All-American Match and Skills Competition. Admission is complimentary to convention attendees, and tickets will be available for under $15 at both Ticketmaster.com and the Alamo Dome box office. The match will air on ESPNU on December 26th at 7 p.m. Eastern. Support the future stars of the sport and make plans to watch or attend this exciting event.
All right, welcome back in, ladies and gentlemen. Vanette Live.
A little soundtrack music there.
Yeah, we're going a little Friday Night Lights for those of you out there. Explosions in the Sky. Clear Eyes, Full Heart. We know Reed Pretty always appreciates that. And Rosenthal, you don't watch Friday Night Lights? You haven't watched it before?
No, I don't. Everybody tells me it's great.
Oh, dude, Netflix, get on it. You'll find yourself staying up. Okay, one more episode. I got to know that they win state.
It takes you back to high school football, huh?
Oh, dude.
Did you play high school football?
I played freshman year. I played through the whole preseason and then dropped out before the season started. That was a mistake on my part. But being 5'6", 130 pounds, having hit guys who had matured a lot earlier than me was not high on my list.
I was the high school mascot.
Were you? Nice.
Yeah. I knocked out the South Park Eagle. Knocked his head off. No joke. Knocked him over. We wrestled, tussled, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Literally, on the sidelines while the game's going on, timeouts called. Okay, not because of us. But and I'm literally, you can see it in video, seen running around the stadium, eventually run onto the field with the South Park Eagle's head in hand. The ultimate, like, mascot disgrace. Yeah. And finally got caught by him because you know my blazing speed. Again, we were wrestled to the ground. And this time all I did was hold on to my head because I didn't want it to be reciprocated. And the police had to separate us.
Fantastic. Today you guys would go to jail. They charge your parents with crimes. And I'm sure back then it was just sort of washed under. Maybe you had to write some sentences or go to a suspension or something for a couple of days.
Yeah. Football team carried me off the field. I felt like Rudy.
I love it. Hey, you said we're going to have Chris Poole. I had to guess a little bit backwards. We are going to have our first guest joining us right now from Nebraska. You know him from richkern.com. Well, some of us know him from richkern.net. But most people know him from richkern.com and his prognostications and reporting on the world of women's sports. Welcome to the Net Live for the first time, Rich Kern. Rich.
Hey, how you doing there?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for calling in and joining us.
Certainly.
Give the folks out there a little bit of the history on richkern.com, how it started, and how you came to be involved with volleyball.
Well, I guess the short story of how I got involved in the web is Terry Pettit. A little bit longer story is I got our office started in working on the web in 1994, and I was doing a little search on my noon hour for volleyball information in 1995, and I found that there were only 7 sites available for dealing anything with volleyball through a Yahoo search. Mm-hmm. And this was using the Mosaic browser for Unix, which, since there wasn't any Microsoft products or anything else at the time. And so I thought, you know, this is really going to be big, or had the potential of being big. So I talked to our sports information office and said, you know, we ought to think about doing something like this. Are you guys thinking of doing anything like this for volleyball? And I don't know that they really even knew too much about the web at the time. And so I said, let me put a demo together of what can be done with this. And it was pretty rudimentary at the time. But I did, and they showed it to Terry Pettit, and Terry said, yeah, he was really involved, wanted to be involved in that. And so after that, I started doing it for 4 years as a volunteer for the University of Nebraska. And after that, then I started richkern.com in 1999, and that's where I am now, I guess. I started out as just Division I. Well, first at the University of Nebraska, I was just doing the Husker volleyball for the first couple of years. Then I started doing a section that I kind of called National Interest, still on their site, and they promoted it, where I was just collecting the scores and things for the top 25 teams. And then I started doing all of D1 the fourth year that I was at the Husker Volleyball website. And then when I started my own, then I eventually grew out to Division 1, 2, 3, NAIA, some junior college information too. And so that's sort of where I am today.
Yeah, describe for our listeners who aren't familiar with your service what kind of information it is that you're offering, that you're putting out there. This is a paid subscription service that a lot of coaches in the Division 1 and Division 2, and certainly outside of that volleyball world, utilize. Give our listeners a feeling for what's there.
Well, first, there is a free side of it, too. And I wanted to do that because it does say right on there that I'm there to promote volleyball, college women's volleyball. And I do want to do whatever I can for that. So to that extent, then you can get all the scores on a nightly basis And you can get, and then the another key item that's on there is recruits, and you can get all the new recruits on the free part of the site. On the paid side, well, and then the other thing that I do as a free service for the AVCA is I distribute all the scores on a nightly basis, two or three times a night. They're sent out to all the media that want to be included on the AVCA mailing list, and then the coaches and SIDs and things like that that are on that belong to the AVCA. And then in addition to that, on the paid side of the site, you have all that information, but also you get all the archived. When I'm talking about you get the scores on the free side, you get that just for that night or a couple of nights, I guess. But on the paid side, then it's all archived for all the seasons that I've been doing it since 1999. Same thing for the recruits. You get all that information for all the recruits going back to 1999 of the different schools in all the divisions. At least all the information that I find. I don't hear about every one of the recruits that are out there. Mm-hmm. Some schools just don't promote them at all. Sometimes we just can't find out about them. But I do have quite a bit of it. And then the other big thing that's on there is ranking systems. And we have a couple of them. One of them is done by, it's called Pablo, and it's done by a person who sort of remains anonymous. And then another one is the, that I call the RKPI, which modestly called Rich Kern percentage index, but it's modeled after the ratings percentage index of the NCAA. And when I say modeled after, I try to simulate it exactly. There's a minor things that I don't know, but they are very minor and generally make very little difference on the different rankings that are produced by the RKPI and the RPI.
Rich, Brandon Rosenthal here, and ever since I got into college coaching, I heard about your site, and literally every day, it's probably one of the first sites I check and whatnot. Is there a way to tell who checks the site and how many times a day? Because I must check it at least 20 to 25 times a day, especially on Friday and Saturday.
Oh, I can track you, yes. But I don't release that information to other people. But, yeah, I can track what everybody's doing on the site.
Kevin, just to kind of give you an idea, just some of the little things that you can do, on the site is just – it's a lot of fun just to kind of go and tool around. It's definitely going to waste some time. So, don't do it in a hurry. But, anything from, teams and how they do against certain conferences. And the list just goes on and on.
So you can slide that any way you want them.
Yeah, it's really neat. And, when you first get started, you kind of just wonder, oh, I wonder how we were doing against such and such a conference. And before you know it, you kind of always find yourself back at this site because it really has all the answers, whether you're scheduling for the next year or, just trying to keep track on how everybody's doing this year. And then the two different, the Pablo and the RKPI, I think give you a really, good indication of where your team is, throughout the year, especially before the RPI rankings come out. And I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of people out there that put a lot more stock in these two rankings than the RPI.
Yeah, Rich, talk to us about the rankings, about the different systems and your feelings on yours versus Pablo versus the RPI.
Well, again, with the RKPI, it is supposed to be as close to the RPI as I can get it. So there's really not too much difference to speak about there. What it is really kind of geared towards is tracking the quality of the competition and rather than how good your team is yourself. Whereas the Pablo, it's more of a good predictor tool, and it's the best thing out there that I find. I've tried to write other ranking programs, and I can't come nearly as good as what the Pablo can. And so it's one that I think most coaches that are familiar with it are respect as far as being able to get the best grasp of where they are in relation to other teams.
So Pablo, the Banksy of volleyball, nobody actually knows who's behind it?
Well, I do. There's a few people that do.
Is this a project, Rich, that has grown to something bigger than you had ever imagined?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. I would have never called it richkern.com if I'd have known what it was going to become. I just knew that I wanted to have a site, and just to play around with this was just going to be a plaything for me, just to learn what HTML was back in those days. And so I just called it that and figured that I'd have it slash volleyball so that I could have other topics that I wanted to be, other hobbies that I wanted to do at the time. And it's just sort of gone towards all volleyball now, and it's I retired from my real job, which was a civil engineer, to do this now, and I just during the volleyball season I'm just totally focused on the website, and then once that's over, then my wife owns me to do whatever she wants me to do.
You're listening,
Rich,
to
on
here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to Rich Kern of richkern.com. Brandon, go ahead.
Rich, on a typical weekend, kind of give us, because I would be really interested, from about 5 o'clock on, what's life like on Friday night and then, you know, noon on Saturday?
Friday night, you can go any time of the week, and I start before that. But if you're going at just for entering scores, then it really depends on two things. First, I have some very good people that work with me on this, and I pay them very little, but for the time that they put on it. But from about 5 o'clock, as I mentioned, I'm a Husker fan. If I'm not going to the game, then I'm recording scores from 5 till about 1 o'clock, and it's my wife keeps telling me I need to get up and walk around more, that I don't do it. But anyway, it's just pretty solid entering scores. Saturday, pardon?
Okay, no, go ahead.
Okay, Saturday, as soon as I get up, usually I can't go to sleep right afterwards because I'm just kind of wired yet, so I end up staying up till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, then I get up at whatever time, 7 or 8, and by then somebody else has got on and kind of finished any of the late-night scores, maybe some of the Hawaii scores. And gets those in as much as we can. There's a lot of teams out there that don't even post their scores on the web. It's really frustrating time because we have to go out and actually get most of those scores. There's a few SIDs and coaches that do enter the scores for us, and NAI has a site where we can get some of the scores there. But for the most part, we go out there to all the school websites and find them and enter them, and sometimes we have to go to the websites many, many times before we can finally get the score that's been posted. So anyway, Saturday morning we get started early, and like I say, 7, 8 o'clock by the time I get going, and going pretty much till, again, 1 o'clock at night, and it's pretty solid.
And what's just the general response from, especially from coaches, as you go to the Final Four or just hear from them, you know, throughout the years? I mean, kind of as Kevin alluded to, it sounds like this site has just grown enormously. And, you know, if the coaches out there are anything like me, like I said, I check the site probably, no joke, about 15 times a day.
When I go to the ABCA convention, I got to admit, it's kind of an ego trip. it's just fun to get an opportunity to talk to a lot of the coaches in person that I've emailed with over the years. And it's just fun to hear their comments. And now whenever especially now that we're in the Big Ten, I get to meet several new coaches that I have not met before, and it's just fun to talk to the different coaches. And these are guys and ladies, women, that I have looked up to for years. I'm just in awe of some of their abilities and what they've done over the years and how much they've contributed to the sport. And now I get to talk to them in person. So that's just another part of the fun thing of having the website.
Rich, you mentioned on your website, one of the things I saw there is that you say feedback is welcome. What's the best piece of feedback and the worst piece of feedback you've ever received?
Oh, the absolute best is corrections. There's no way that you can have this information out there and not have mistakes on it. We enter scores. We're up to about 20,000 scores for this year so far. I don't know, something in that range. And as I mentioned, we enter a lot of them by hand. There's no way you can get them all in there 100%. So if anybody sees any scores in there that are wrong, please, please do let me know. And I do have some that do that. So that's the best kind of information I like. The information that I don't necessarily, it's not that I don't like it, but they'll complain about maybe a Pablo ranking. They said, oh, why is this team above this, and they beat them, and this team beat that. And you know, I don't do the Pablo first, but if they would read the FAQ that's on there on the site, it gives you a better understanding of what the Pablo ranking is like. And then also it specifically says on the FAQ to contact the author, and they will be happy to talk to you. about what the Pablo is and what it is not. And so, that, you know, it's not really a complaint. I just, to be honest, I really don't get too many complaints about the site. So there's not too many comments that I get that I don't appreciate it a lot.
Are your primary
all
coaches?
I'm sorry, what?
Are your primary customers all coaches, do you think?
No, there's a lot of just fans that are on there. I'm sure you're much familiar with Volitalk. There's quite a few members from Volitalk that are on there. Another thing that really is useful to people is the recruiting information that's on there. And so parents and the PSAs belong quite a bit too, because there's a lot of information about what school ranks where within a conference, or which conferences are best. And it's strictly volleyball related. It has nothing to do with academics. I don't even want to touch that very much. There's a little bit on there, but not much. But primarily, it's a good way to find out how a particular school ranks to other teams. So one of the things that's on there, particularly for D1, is it has all the rosters and who the primary starters are on each one of the teams. So you can get an idea of when those teams are going to be graduating their starters. So parents that are looking for what teams that their kids might be appropriate for, they can look at that and see, okay, this kid that's starting now is going to be graduating in a couple of years. My daughter is a freshman. This is something that it might fit for her to be working in towards that particular angle. So it helps them on the athletic side of what schools might be appropriate for their daughters.
Rich, final question for me is just, the site's grown so much in the past couple of years, just this content and scores and whatnot. What do you see over the next couple of years for your site to bring to not only coaches, but, as you said, parents and PSAs and whatnot?
You know, I wish I had a better model for the future, but I really don't. What it really comes down to is I do look at Volitalk a lot because, hard to believe, but there are really some good people on there. Sometimes I get a less than that, but there really are some good minds out there. And they ask questions, or they want to say, I wish I knew how to do this, or I wish this information was available. That's the best thing that I like to see is, I wish this information was available, because if I can think if there's any way that I can try to produce it, then I'm going to give it a shot. And so that's kind of what I live off these days, is other people's ideas, because mine's kind of stagnated to the point where, you know, I still come up with a few things that I like to add, but it's coaches' suggestions of what they would like to see, and fan suggestions and parents' questions. SIDs have asked how, if I could put this kind of information together, and I'm happy to do that for them, but if I can possibly do it, what I'd rather do is make it so that everybody has it available. And because there's a lot of things that information that I can put out there that I have no idea how it's even going to be used. It's just something that I can do, so I do. And then I find out, well, this person used it in that way, and I never even thought about that. And then they say, well, can you combine it with this, and it can give us this type of information. So for me, it's just a growth as I can, because I'm kind of at the end of the extent of my originality, I guess, on the site.
Rich, we'll get you out of here on this question, kind of a philosophical one. You mentioned that you recognized the need for the internet as it related to the sport of volleyball early on. Do you think the sport of volleyball is being serviced appropriately on the internet, or is there space for more content, or perhaps a more direct space to go for volleyball information?
Well, I think the kind of information that you're providing right now is very good. It gives people an access to some of the I hate to use the word experts because I'm on here right now, but some of the people that really do know some of the inside information, and gets an opportunity to meet some of the people like Chris Poole or Brandon Rosenthal and things like that they normally would not get an opportunity to listen to. And so it gets it to the fans and the people that are going to help the sport grow. Things like that. There's ways that they could expand to get the scores out there a little bit faster, because that's one thing that just really drives the Fridays and Saturday nights, obviously, is getting the scores out there as soon as you possibly can. That's part of the reason that I wanted to even get into the internet, because when I first started, there was just almost no way to get information. And so the only way that, that the sport could possibly grow was to make information available to fans to give them something to talk about. So once you can give them more and more and more to talk about, then you're going to draw more people into it. So that's the key thing, is just getting the information out there so people can understand it, and so that they can get a grasp of what it's all about, and exciting, fun opportunities to, of attending the matches and things like that.
Rich, we're with you on the equation that more talk about the sport is good, and you're a place where there's a lot of talk generated, a lot of information available. RichKern.com, get out there and check it out. And Rich, thank you so much for joining us here on the Net Live today.
It's certainly been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Rich Kern checking in from Nebraska. Brandon, that was some interesting stuff there about that site in particular and the world of volleyball from a guy who really was kind of a pioneer when it came to use of the Internet.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you kind of were hitting on that. The idea that he really started this out with kind of on a whim is really neat to see kind of what it's grown to and where it continues to grow. You know, Rich, that site to me is like I said, a mainstay, and it's one that I know all the coaches, you know, spend hours, literally hours on throughout the year, not just in season, but out of season. So hats off to him. I try to tell him every once in a while how great a job he does, but, you know, he really is. And I think kind of the next evolution, somebody mentioned this on the chat board, will kind of be kind of integrating Game Tracker and kind of getting all that information to kind of coincide with each other, so that score updates and score, you know, just the scores will be a little bit more accurate and a little bit faster, you know, as the years goes on.
Well, I think,
and I can't believe you didn't ask him if he eats Runza.
That's a fine point. We need to put that down to ask of anyone from Nebraska, how much do you love or hate Runza? For those that have never been out to Nebraska, when you go by, make sure you have a Runza. Go in. It's what, beef and cabbage strewn together along with nacho cheese or with various other
tater tots.
Tater tots all ground up into a dough pocket. And there is nothing wrong with a Runza when you are really hungry. There could be something wrong with a Runza later after it's been processed by your body, but we won't discuss that here on the program. All right, we've got much more to come here on the show. Still have Chris Poole of Florida State coming up. We also have College Volleyball Weekly, of course. We're going to talk more about that. There were some good five-set matches, as there have been this entire season. And when we come back, we'll talk about the Women's World Cup. The women getting it done over there in Japan. We knew that they were a good team, but they have started strong. We'll have more information on that here in just a minute on the Net Live.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to the sport's biggest stars. Whether you're interested in the junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Adrenaline shot. I'm doing a fluid bust to do with new moves. Whether you like it or not, you see, I've learned a lot. A bit of who I am and most of what I'm not. So I gotta get 100% of all that I got. And can't stop till I'm on the side. Put my name on the Rockaway Chill West Coast. Do it the heart after God. Ain't about to stop. Battles are fought. William Wallace, brave heart. Strictly fight for the cause. And I've been given the same as the rest of you guys. This never ending rope with knots. And I can never fall off because I'm always reaching for the top. Rock and fold the wisdom I drop, and every man stand up. I got the crew on lock, and the back's covered similar to having a dozen older brothers, man. But that is my point. I'm just speaking over this joint like it never comes up, comes out. No doubt the appearance has changed. Boy to man, I'm looking in the mirror, get it together. Keeps no longer clever. Try to be
they don't want to hear complaining. Just get the job done, and I ain't doing them no favors. What they thinking of crazy? Don't want to hear a bunch of labor. Show me a baby, yeah, acting tough and crazy. Most of them show when they go in. When it comes down to it, they got some lazy, delicate and daisy. Scratch your face, don't let it be seen. Yeah, I knew you was a bitch when you walked in, front in his mask.
Welcome back in the Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Going for a contrast here, the music selection, a little bit of Nate Adams there.
Those I like it.
Those of you who know who Nate Adams is, bonus points for you. He's an FMX guy and former racer, but also into a little bit of rap, so there you go.
Barney, what about the, I'm sorry, my ignorance is going to show here, what about the FMX guy that died the other day?
Yeah, I heard about that down at Texas Motor Speedway. They were doing an exhibition and died in practice. I don't know much about it. I don't know him in particular. I'm not a huge FMX guy. I know a few guys, Kyle Loza and the like, but I am not all the way into FMX. I'm more of a racer. So if something happened to a racer, I'd be all up on it. But
Excuse me, sorry.
The FMX guys, yeah, just a little bit. Those guys are nuts. I mean, even, look, I was standing down on the track at the Monster Energy Cup a couple weeks ago there in Vegas, and all the best racers in the world are lined up ready to go. And they're in awe of what these FMX guys are doing. And if these racers who go, you know, 60, 70 miles an hour over 110-foot jumps are in awe of what somebody's doing, you know it's pretty well out there. Unbelievable, crazy stuff. And I'm surprised people don't die more often, honestly. Makes you long for volleyball where it's not too dangerous. Worst thing you can do maybe is blow out a knee or have a couple of knee surgeries, but you're not going to have some terrible impact injury. Much more to come here on the show today. Chris Poole, Florida State, coming up. College Volleyball Weekly here in just a few minutes. Brandon, let's get back to some reporting here. FIVB Phuket just happened. Kessie and Ross finished second. They lose to the Chinese duo out there of, let's see, Chen Zhu and Ji Zhang, if I can even come close to pronouncing those correctly.
That's pretty good.
A couple of Italians finishing third, but a good end of the season for Kessie Ross. I said a couple weeks ago on this program that I felt like on the men's side, Rosie Gibb has been a team that you're kind of waiting for them to dominate. I feel almost the same way. Not quite. I think Kessie and Ross are ahead of where Rosie Gibb are. But I feel like Kessie and Ross are a team that I'm just waiting for them to really solidify their hold and put a stranglehold in that first place position as far as United States teams go and the world. Because it seems like they have the potential. They're the best serving team out there on the beach, bar none. Probably the best two overall athletes out there together. Not playing roles, but the two best, most complete players out there in a partnership. And it just seems like they should rise to the top and really hold on to that spot. And they've kind of been back and forth out of that spot a few times.
Are we spoiled by what Misty and Carrie did? I mean,
I'm not expecting that kind of dominance. That's a good question. I'm not expecting that kind of dominance, but I'm expecting a two or three tournament run or coming home and dominating the events that they're in here domestically. I'm expecting them to routinely be in the final every time and have a shot. That's kind of what I'm expecting. I'm not expecting them to win 109 matches or whatever the number, crazy number was, and however many tournaments it was in a row that Misty and Carrie put together. But I'm expecting more dominance than I'm getting out of them, and certainly out of my perception of their abilities as volleyball athletes and as a partnership.
Well, I don't know. I just think that I kind of look at it the reverse. I look at the idea that when you do have that dominance, whether it's Misty and Carrie or whatever it is in whatever sport, I think in the moment, you know, we come to expect it and come to want more and more and more. But after the fact, we start to realize how special it was. And I think, you know, in today's day and age, you know, you've got better and better athletes and you got more of them. So you're going to have that, you know, parity a little bit more. I mean, you look at the NFL, you look at, I mean, all around the, you know, professional sports, you just don't have that dominance anymore.
Yeah, certainly on the FIVB side, they've had an incredible influx of athletes from all over the world. And every time we have a beach athlete on here, they talk about the strength of that field week in and week out. And you have athletes rising up out of countries you never would have thought of to be good at volleyball, and they're routinely competing for podium positions. So, yeah, I think it is a tough environment, a very tough environment. And certainly they are an excellent team. And in this show, so many times we get into shades of gray.
we start talking about individual athletes or individual teams and their performances, and we make some criticisms of their performances. Obviously, these people are incredible at what they do. And don't ever lose sight of that. Even if there's some criticism coming here on this show for what they're doing or haven't done or have failed to perform at, we're talking about the elite in the sport, whether it's on the beach or the indoor side. And even when we're talking about college, we're talking about the elite American athletes of that age. We're kind of splitting hairs at times, and I think it's worth remembering that it's not a black or white, and certainly we're not saying they suck out loud.
Although I think you did say that on a show once. If you're not winning,
I might have
you suck.
I said you're not doing a great job, and that's an indefensible statement, but it was fun to say. Let's move over to Women's World Cup because it is underway, and this is a very unique tournament. You oftentimes hear people who are the old timers of a sport, no matter the sport, lament the days when we had to go out and play in the sun and it was hot and there was no air conditioning and our uniforms were 3 years old. And it's like the grumpy old man from SNL, old Dana Carvey character. And you get all that lamenting how it was in the good old days and it was much more difficult and harder and the athletes worked better, worked more and were more dedicated and all this other garbage. Well, you know what? The World Cup format throws all that garbage out the window. The World Cup format is 11 matches in 14 days. And we're not talking about going down to the beach with your friends or going out to the volleyball court there in Illinois or heading out to a picnic with your friends in Kansas and playing 11 days straight of picnic ball. We're talking about high-level international volleyball competing for a spot in the Olympics, 11 matches in 14 days. This is a grind that I don't think exists anywhere else in the sport, except maybe the Olympic Games. That's the only other tournament that comes close. But even that doesn't have as many matches as this. The American women started out 3 matches in 3 days. They travel, 3 matches in 3 days, travel. They are on the verge of taking on Kenya. That match is going to happen today or tonight here, tomorrow morning there. I'm expecting the women to win that. But they've opened with a 3-0 record. And they've done it against Brazil, Serbia, and Korea. The Brazil win, 3-1, in the very first match was huge. That's world number one Brazil against world number two United States women. Certainly a fantastic start to the tournament because they will not see Brazil again. This is 11 matches. There are 12 teams. You play everybody once, and you are done. It is on record. Top three go to the Olympic Games. Sorry. Just moving around here in the studio. So a fantastic start for those women. And also Serbia, a team that I told you guys to have on your radar for this event, and I still think they should be on your radar for the event. They're currently sitting at 2-1. But this is a perfect start for the Americans. Brandon, do you have any thoughts on this tournament? Are you following it at all, or are you just too busy?
No, I am. And I think when you put the numbers to it and you say, 11 matches in 14 days, I mean, that's – you're right, but when you start to talk about what's at stake, that's even more. I know, in just the grind of our season, when you have 3 matches or, as we did, 4 matches in 7 days, it's amazing that athletes can, recover. And I guess at the end of the day, that's what makes them so special. But, yeah, that's tremendous. I mean, and like I said, the whole idea, and I've talked about this with my team, the idea that, you work for 4 years to get to one tournament, is hard for me to comprehend just because, I've never had that experience. But, I can imagine, not just the physical pressure, but the mental pressure to stay on top of your game. And not only that, but to, scout and understand the other team's offense and defense and, all that goes into it. I got to imagine, some heads are spinning at sometimes. It's a lot of information.
Yeah, you just have to get into that mode where every day it's the scouting report, then it's practice, and then you're back in your room and you're eating and, all these things. And the great thing about Japan is they make it so much easier to do that than in some of the other places. The environment in Japan is just fantastic for a tournament like this where it's so important to stay on schedule and keep yourself ready.
Well, that was going to be my question to you. how does the routine, and we talk about the routine, and we're talking about, hey, we're going to eat breakfast at 10, we'll do scouting report at 11, we'll do a little serve and pass at, 12:30, come back, take a nap. How much does that factor into the success or not of a team?
It's incredibly important for you to be able to maintain your sanity and your focus as an athlete and make sure that you're doing everything necessary to keep your body in shape. I mean, people will talk about the physical aspects of that, and you hear about it on the beach all the time where they talk about the physical aspects of having to play so many matches, or they used to back when they had bigger fields and longer tournaments. Certainly the physical aspect will take its toll, but I think the greater threat to team success is the mental aspect of keeping yourself ready to play, being able to leave the last match behind, being able to move on and focus on the next match in an appropriate way and then come and play the next match in the moment. And this is where I think you really start to see obviously the difference in athletes, and you'll see that. You'll see the difference in athletes and their performance and the difference in teams, but I think it's the difference in coaches. I think it rises all the way to the coaches and their ability to construct that schedule that you're talking about and construct the narrative for the athletes and the focus for the athletes and being able to move that forward. And I think this is where a strong coaching staff really shows up, or a weak coaching staff really shows up, is in the latter part of this tournament. 3-0 is great. The question is, with Kenya, Germany, Argentina, Algeria, Dominican, China, Italy, and Japan coming up for the Americans, can you keep your team focused? Can you come out against a team like Algeria, who you know you have to beat, you are expected to beat, and you must beat if you're going to continue to have a good record? And that's going to be match number 7 out of 11. How can you bring your team to that match in such a way that they remain focused and remain ready? That's the
and
question.
I've heard you talk about this, in regards to Hugh and his staff, and, you've been very complimentary about the way he goes about his business and the idea that he can keep not only players fresh, but the atmosphere and the chemistry fresh. And I think the chemistry is a point that a lot of people don't realize is, how important that is. And we can blow it off and say, oh, it's not no big deal. But I'm here to tell you that, one bad move or one bad, day of bad chemistry could really, affect the rest of the tournament. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And if you don't think about the composition of your team heading into a tournament like this with that in mind, who travels well? Remember talking about in this program Tom Hoff in the 2008 team. Tom Hoff didn't play as much late in his career, but you better believe that his presence was in that team and on that floor every day because of Tom's ability to manage people. And we have talked a lot about Hugh's ability to manage people and manage situations and be thoughtful about team construction, schedule construction, practice construction. A lot of coaches don't think about that stuff. They have something they want to get in. They just jam it in. And they're so nervous about what's happening in front of them or behind them, they have to jam it in. And we have to do this. We can't waste any time. We can't do this. And they forget about managing the people. You look at a field.
How important is time off or doing something fun, in a city that maybe you've never been to and things like that? And we've talked about that in relations to, what we go through, on the college side, and the experience of the girls and what they're going through at that point,
It's incredibly important, and coaches have to fight their own urge to get something else done or focus on some individual skill, or give more information in a scouting report. Nothing drove me crazier than sitting in a scouting report for 45 to 50 minutes. Because what is a scouting report worth in a match? At the outside, I think it's worth 4 or 5 points. At the outside of what it might be worth in a match. And a coach will say to you, oh, those 4 or 5 points could make the difference. Yeah, they could, but what you could spend your time doing is focusing on your own team and what you can control. And spend more time, spend that extra 25 minutes with something on your own team, something that you can actually affect in a greater way. And I guarantee that is worth 4 or 5 points in 20 minutes, maybe 10 points or more in 20 minutes than it is an extra 20 minutes on the opponent. Because quite honestly, I don't care about the opponent for the most part. I have faith in my abilities. I have faith in the abilities of my teammates. And I expect that if we go out and we play well and we execute our ability to play in the small framework of what they do, I believe in us. And I don't care who you put on the other side of the net. You could not tell me who it is. Let me just prepare to play well on my own side of the net. And you could put me out there against number one or number 25 in the world, and there shouldn't be any difference. And that is the point. That is what coaches always talk about. Don't play up or play down to your opponent. That is the whole point. So don't give me an hour on the opponent. I don't care. I can't control them, and I don't care. Give me a couple little things, where they like to go, what they like to do. But I think a mistake so many coaching staffs make, and I've been on these teams with these coaches, talking about, well, this guy, he only hits line. Well, that's not true. If he's on the national team, odds are he can hit angle too. Even if he's on the 25th ranked national team in the world, odds are he could go angle also. Don't get overly obsessive about one thing. Give me a little bit of information. Let me process that in the context of me playing well on my side. But as a coach, you struggle with that because you've watched all this tape. You've scouted all these people. You've talked to the coaches who played them before. You've done all this, and you want to give all this information to your team. But you have to edit it down into a form that is going to suit your athletes' needs, your team's success, but not overly complicate what's happening out there on the floor in tenths or eighths of a second.
Can I get an amen, brother? Man, you were going there. I don't know if I have to go to church on Sunday. You're preaching, baby. I like it.
Yeah. Now we can talk about the Flag Football Eagles. No. But it is. It's a delicate thing to manage people, and I think it comes all the way down into your selections of people to go to tournaments. And this is where you hear about veteran experience. And you take a guy like Tom Hoff because, yeah, you might be able to play some young middle for an extra, let's say, 25 points over the course of 5 or 10 matches. You might get a few more points played by this player. You might get a couple extra blocks by this player, maybe just on physicality alone. But then you're going to lose all that experience and all that ability to deal with teammates, the ability to travel well, the ability to dictate the team's attitude while traveling. It's so important. So important. And I went from being like the grumpiest traveler to being a person who was an asset traveling. And that was a huge change for me. It made on the court so much easier.
It's crazy you're talking about this, and Coach Hula on the message board brings up a great point, and something that I often do at the end of the year is ask our athletes, you know, what was their favorite moment, and, you know, right to the top of the list you would think, you know, winning and whatnot would be there, but it's usually the stuff on the side, you know, you go into a new city and giving them a chance to kind of walk around or to go and see, whatever it is, a landmark or experience a new restaurant that's, you know, only in that city that carries a lot of weight. And, I think in a tournament like this, I would imagine that obviously routine is very key. But I also think that that downtime and that time to get away from volleyball, especially with the grind of it. I mean, there's not much more of a bigger grind than 11 matches in 14 days. I think that that's probably a huge thing. And you know, I've asked you a lot of times about Hugh and his mindset on that stuff, and you've kind of mentioned that all those are things that he does very well. So I would imagine that the U.S. will continue to do well, and a lot of that has to do with coaching staff and being able to put them in the right place.
Certainly. Certainly. I think Hugh and his staff have a good handle on it. Obviously, 3-0 is a great start. We're going to continue to follow them. They will be facing off against Kenya, followed by Germany, Argentina, Algeria, Dominican Republic, China, Italy, and Japan. And that's a strong finish right there. China, not as good as they used to be. Italy, going to be a good test for the U.S. women. And Japan, at home, they're about one player short of being fantastic, but I believe they were a third ranked in the world, maybe fourth. Have to go back and look it up. But they are also a very good team. I'll be doing the Germany match for Universal, as well as a couple of other matches. I think the Italy and Japan matches, finishing that up on Universal Sports. So get out there and check it out on Universal Sports if you want to watch these women play. Destiny Hooker is playing. There were some issues, whether she was going to play or not, due to some physical health issues, but she has been there and has been playing, so that was good news for them. And lots of other veterans on that squad. Danielle Scott-Ahuda making another appearance at a World Cup. She just keeps doing it. I'm going to expect her to be on the roster for another 15 years. But check it out, U.S. women getting it done on their way to Olympic qualification. Need to move on here in the Net Live, and it's been another wild week of volleyball, and we have a new number one. Maybe not new, maybe again for these UCLA Bruins. The Net Live and the American Volleyball Coaches Association are proud to present each week the best that was and the best that will be in the world of college volleyball. It's the Bruins of Westwood atop the rankings once again as we welcome in our correspondents. We already have one of them, Brandon, who's co-hosting today, but we also have Holly McPeak. And Mike Sonheimer, who I'm sure just enjoyed listening to that right there.
Always fun.
All right. You know what? Going to Pepperdine, I've had enough of this stuff from UCLA. That's enough
of
that.
That was a great dramatic pause, though. I mean, that was good.
Thanks, Brandon. You can come on the show anytime. Now, I've got a 619 number here. Who's on 619? Is Holly? Somebody doing dishes. I don't have Holly raised up here yet, but we do have Brandon and Mike. Gentlemen, last week, Mike, you gave us Washington and UCLA and Washington and USC. And both times, Washington went down, including badly against SC. What is up with the Huskies?
They have a good team. They just don't have a lot of official termination. I mean, they had a set point in set one against UCLA, and they were even a deuce game in set three and just couldn't finish. And Jim McLaughlin's got Stanford and Cal at home this weekend, but right now I don't see the Huskies as getting a top 16 seed since the NCAA committee has been so RPI-driven.
Yeah, should they even be in the tournament? I mean, they're 10-6 right now in the conference and 18-6 overall. If they continue playing the way they have, they're going to struggle to even meet that 500 criteria, yeah, with a few matches remaining?
They're fine. I mean, they're definitely one of the top 20 teams in the country. And all I can tell you is that no team is going to want to have them as a possible first or second round match on the other team's home court. They're a team that's very capable of beating a top team, and they're close. It's just that there's so many teams that are so close, it's one or two players away. I mean, there's some great matches coming up this week and a lot of things going on, but everybody is so close. And Washington, like I say, is one player away from, you know, consistency, being able to beat the UCLA's, SC, Stanford's, and Cal's.
Yeah, getting back to the Big Ten, and Brandon, talking about close matches, number 11 Purdue takes down number 5 Illinois in four after Illinois took the first set.
Yeah, and, you know, this is one of those matches I think everybody was looking forward to, especially after their first match of the year at Illinois. Purdue's got a great team. I've definitely been one of the people out there that's been saying, hey, watch out for this team, watch out for this team. And once again, they've proven why they are so good, especially at home. I mean, they packed that place out in Lafayette and do a real nice job. And, you know, it's going to be real interesting, this final push, you know, for the Big Ten. I mean, I think it's going to, you know, Purdue's got a pretty tough road ahead with Nebraska at home, and then Penn State on the road, and then finishing up with Wisconsin on the road, and throw in Ohio State on the road. So no easy weekend for them, but I've been really impressed by what they continue to do.
Hanging back over to the Pac-10 action, USC number 4 over Washington State. They hung an 8 on them, an 8. Have you seen a beating worse than that in a conference match, especially a Pac-12 match, Mike?
Mick Haley's got a team that's capable of beating anybody in the country. And right now, if everybody keeps going and SC and UCLA have to play up at Oregon this week, we're looking at potentially at an SC-UCLA championship match Thanksgiving Friday at 5 o'clock at the John Wooden Center, which only seats 2,000. I guarantee people are going to get turned away if it stays that way.
And then at Live, we'll have to try and get a little spot down there on the floor, get some premium seats for that. Brandon, back over to your neck of the woods, Penn State and Minnesota. We knew this was going to be a battle, number 6 versus number 15, and finally Penn State in 5, 15-12, but there's 3 deuce sets in that match.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where, you know, the experience, you know, of both of those programs really comes into play. You know, it's going to be interesting, you know, I truly, truly believe the experience of Russ Rose and what he's got, you know, those girls. You got to remember Deja McClendon, you know, was the freshman last year that was most outstanding player, whatever they call it, in the tournament. I think that, you know, that is coming back to, you know, pay big dividends this year. And you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, for them and Nebraska and the mix as they kind of finish up. You know, they lost a tough one. Penn State lost a tough one to Wisconsin. almost identical, a 34-32 set, and then they ended up losing 15-12 in the fifth. So, you know, this stuff will pay off, you know, come tournament time.
And that loss was probably Chad Delete Youth. You have a big victory over Minnesota, and you come back, and you may take Wisconsin a little bit lightly, and Wisconsin's got a good program. And the Big Ten is so solid. I mean, look at a team like Northwestern is playing really well, that on the bubble of getting in or not getting in.
Mike, Chris Poole is going to be on here, head coach of Florida State, here in just a few minutes. And
doing a great job. I mean, they're the queens of the ACC conference now, and they're fighting for a top 16 seed also.
Yeah, I mean, they're on a 15-match winning streak, just crushing opponents. Again, getting it done this week against North Carolina State and North Carolina.
Which is
good
win.
Do you think that they have a chance to repeat their run into the Elite Eight?
I think they do. I mean, their team, if you look at who they've played, that they're right there. They've got a couple of key losses to teams that are also on the bubble of the top 16, and they've got good talent, and a lot of teams have real good talent. I think it's so much, and again, Brandon knows this more from a coaching standpoint, it really is about matchups. I mean, you're going to look and see and say, oh, that team is seated higher, but the matchup may be wrong. One team may be middle blocker-oriented, the other team's not, or one team's got really good pin hitters, and the other team doesn't have good pin blockers, and those different things can be factors. I mean, we're a few weeks away from the NCAA tournament starting. We're a couple weeks away from the, you know, bracket. And I just think that the matchups are most important. If Florida State gets in the right bracket, they have a shot at being even all the way to San Antonio.
Now, I got to wonder with these rankings. Washington was ranked 10, now they're number 11, despite losing their two matches this week. I mean, not to beat up Washington, but is it really accurate to keep them all the way up at 11, given their results, Mike?
Well, I think the thing you have to look at, and I've said this last year, I said it this year, and if anybody on the NCAA committee is listening, that RPI is a wonderful, wonderful tool, but shouldn't be the ultimate tool in putting together the rankings and the seedings and that type of thing. If RPI, we look at last week's RPI, for example, UCLA is not even going to be a number one seed. There's no Pac-12 team that will even be a number one seed based on what they have down there in the RPI, because the highest Pac-12 team was ranked 7th last week. And I think you have to look a lot at head-to-head matchups and strength of conference. If you have teams at the bottom of your conference that are weaker, it kills off your RPI, and that shouldn't be the catch-all. I mean, there's 10, 15 teams, like I've said all along, that have a shot at being in San Antonio and have a legitimate shot at winning it.
Brandon, taking it back to Michigan, Iowa, another good five-set thriller. Michigan coming out on top 15-9. Is Michigan a team that has potential to go a little far in the playoffs?
You know, I think Michigan's one of those teams that, you know, throughout the year has been challenged or continues to challenge, you know, in the mix. You know, I still think they're kind of probably in that pretender-contender role. And I'm not really certain, you know, you take a look at their schedule. They have losses to, you know, the usual suspects of Purdue, Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois. They did beat Northwestern, but they lost to Michigan State. And so no real bad losses, but nothing that stands out and says, oh, my goodness, you know, good win. They did beat, you know, our alma mater of Pepperdine. They beat Florida State. So, you know, good wins, but nothing that's going to hang their hat that says, hey, you know, they're going to be able to push all the way, you know, I guess to the Elite Eight or the, you know, Final Four.
Running down the top 10, UCLA number 1, Nebraska 2, Stanford 3, SoCal 4, Cal 5, Hawaii 6. So you got top 5 before you even get out of the Big Ten or Pac-12. 7, Illinois, 8, Texas, 9, Penn State, 10, Purdue, 11, Washington, 12, Northern Illinois, 13, Iowa State, 14, Pepperdine, 15, Tennessee. And, Mike, big loss for Texas this past week as far as players goes.
Tell me about it.
Oh. I got a note here that says Kat Bell got hurt this past week.
I don't know how bad she was hurt. I mean, she was 6 kills with no errors and 8 attempts against Kansas before coming out of the match, so I don't know exactly the injury. I mean, that's what Geeter's there for. He's got
Geeter doesn't come to the show anymore, so we have to struggle through.
I know. Geeter, all you can do is what you read, and Texas isn't put anything out, and hopefully she'll be back healthy. It was Texas the most physical team in the country, but Kansas took him right to the wire. I mean, the team we don't really talk about that we have to really talk about, though, when we get to seedings and rankings, Northern Iowa, just year after year, I mean, they're sitting there like 24-1, and their program is doing so well, and they're moving up. And we haven't talked a lot about Hawaii, but Dave Soji, you know, legend in volleyball, this may be his team that he can win it. I mean, he's got the regionals in his home site, and that gets him a great shot to be in San Antonio. They're kind of under the radar because aren't really playing any top teams, but he's got some great players on his team, and if his setting holds up, he's got a chance of winning it.
Hey, you're right about Hawaii. We haven't talked about it much. They're only ranked 6th. They moved up from 8th this past week. They're 24-1.
Exactly.
It seems like we haven't mentioned them at all, yet they have one loss. I don't know why the perception is that they're not that good or that we haven't discussed them.
It's just because they play so many matches in Hawaii. Their one loss is to UCLA. They've beaten some decent teams, but they don't really play. Their conference is a terrible conference. Mexico State probably is about the only team that really under consideration for an at-large. And I think you have to look at that, you know, with the regionals being at their place, and if the NCAA gives them the first two rounds at home, I mean, that place is almost impossible, Hawaii, to beat. I don't care who, any of the teams in the top 10, that's going to be a tough place to go and try to win.
All right, let's give our picks for this upcoming week action as we head down towards tournament time. Mike, we'll go with you first.
Well, I'm really into the two big matches, really, I think, are in the Big Ten. I think Penn State, where they can bounce back, they're playing Illinois, and I don't know what's happened to Illinois in the last 3 weeks. Illinois was playing as the best team in the country, and they just kind of collapsed in the last couple of weeks. And then Nebraska, with their setting situation at Purdue. Nobody has handled Purdue. Their only losses were in close four games. Purdue's been playing great. Ariel Turner is playing like an All-American on the outside. Jones is playing like the best freshman in the country. And I think Purdue at home, they'll have maybe their biggest crowd of all time. If they can beat Nebraska, at least put some pressure on the Huskers to try to win down the stretch to clinch that conference.
Brandon, what's the watch?
You know, I've got a match kind of off the radar, but it's one of the top 30 schools, Western Kentucky versus Middle Tennessee State. This one will be held at MTSU. Two programs that continually get into the tournament, and not just get into the tournament, but move on through the tournament. The first round went to MTSU. This is going to decide who wins the Sun Belt. Both teams are 14-1, and it should be a lot of fun just to kind of see what happens. This is typically one of those matches that usually goes 5, so it should be interesting to see what happens here. And, you know, I don't think it's going to affect the top 25 per se, but it will definitely these are two teams that those top-seeded teams do not want to see in their pod.
Well, I want to bring into the conversation, because we've got her on the line now, Holly McPeak. Holly, give us what to watch this upcoming week.
Well, I'm kind of interested in Stanford at Washington. Stanford was really bad against SC, but really good against SC, really bad against UCLA. So Stanford at Washington is interesting to me, and Penn State versus Illinois. The other one, Kat Bell, was the hottest player in the country before she went down. Texas is always evasive about any injuries. You cannot get the answer out of them.
Yeah.
So I don't even bother at this point, but hopefully it's just a small tweak and she'll be back in the lineup soon, because she is a key to their success.
Yeah, they don't really have – Texas got a couple of easy matches this week, so I mean they really don't need her for a couple of weeks, and the idea is to get her ready for the NCAAs, but she was playing great in the middle, and that was a really nice move by Jared and his staff to move her natural position in the middle and really open up their offense.
So we're calling Jared Elliott Bill Belichick?
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah, that's a good call.
Everyone's questionable until they're actually in the game. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to get a couple of opinions here before we go off this topic, and I want to talk about Lauren Cook and the situation there. She's had several speeding tickets over the last few years up there in Nebraska. She hits a motorcyclist, breaks her leg, drives away, drives until her car is disabled, then finally calls 911 is the report that we're hearing. How should this be treated by the university, by the coaching staff? And then beyond that, would you treat her the same way you'd treat a big-time football player in a big-time program? Mike, we'll start with you.
can start with somebody else. No, I mean, you have to get all the facts have to come out. I mean, I think it's being handled well by Nebraska to suspend her until everything comes through, and I think you would do that with a top football or basketball player until you know all the details. And I mean, again, on social media, there's so much speculation, and people are, you know, going rampant with it. But realistically, until you know all the facts and the exact situation and everything that's going on, all you can do is suspend and hope that it gets pleaded out. And she's a great, you know, she's a great young woman, and hopefully she'll be back for the playoffs.
Holly, any thoughts on how the coaching staff should deal with it now? I mean, is this a situation where they should preemptively suspend her, or should they wait for the adjudication outside of the program to take its course?
That's a very tough question. I mean, my gut instinct is somebody who's arrested, who's driving with the suspended license. I don't know all the facts, but if that is accurate, suspension seems appropriate. But like I said, I don't know all the details. I hear she pulled over and called, and I don't know if she waited till her car was disabled. So, you know, a lot of it's hearsay. I don't know the facts. If the player was on my team, you know, probably a suspension until everything settled would be in order. But like I said, I need to know more to make a decision.
Yeah, let's talk about that. We have a coach on the line here, Brandon. I mean, take out the fact that this is the coach's daughter, but just any player on your team in this type of situation, what would be your inclination to dealing with them? Would you immediately suspend them, or would you wait for some sort of justice from outside?
You know, I think it's been handled correctly. I think when you get into some of these bigger situations, I think there is a call to action. We always talk about being on the front porch of the university, whether that's good or bad. You know, most of the time we're talking about the good and the benefits that we get from that. The other side of it is just, you know, hey, in this situation, there's been, you know, somebody that's arrested, and I think it's, you know, I think it's a statement by the university, by the department, by the team that says, hey, listen, we stand for something bigger than this, and, you know, until that time, until we can kind of get all those facts sorted out, you know, we are going to suspend them. And, you know, it's interesting. In Cook's media, you know, his press release the other day, you know, he said in, you know, 97-98% of the volleyball programs in the country, this doesn't make as big a news, but, you know, he also understands that he's glad he's in that position. So, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and, you know, credit to him and his staff and the Nebraska athletic department for taking a stand and saying, hey, listen, let's get this right. And until we do, you know, we got to keep her out.
Yeah, I think good thoughts there to wait for what the actual facts of the case are. There have been a bunch of reports about a suspended license, or if she waited till she had a flat tire, or the number of speeding tickets she's had, or any of the other information that's been out there. We really aren't sure, and one of the reasons we didn't touch it last week is because we weren't sure of all the facts as it was just coming out in the mainstream media what was happening. But it's certainly a story we're going to continue to follow, and something that you're going to have to continue to deal with when you're coaching young people who make bad choices.
That's one thing we should say, though, and again, I can speak for as a father, and Holly's now a mother, and it's just so hard as a parent for John Cook. It's one thing to be the coach, to be another thing to be the father of that situation. And I feel very badly for him as a father to have to go through that with your daughter, because it just makes it doubly tough.
Absolutely. To go through it with any player would be challenging, and certainly when it's your daughter, it's times above that, big times. Thanks very much for joining us, everybody. We appreciate it. Holly, thanks for taking a few minutes away from your child care there. We know we hear the baby in the background, and you're a busy woman today. You're in motherhood. But we appreciate you jumping on the line.
Thanks
as always.
All right, College Volleyball Weekly. Big thanks to our correspondents there, Mike Sondheimer, Holly McPeak, and, of course, Brandon Rosenthal, who continues to be here as our co-host for today. We have people out, Jeremy Roche out there in Turks and Caicos, so he knows a little bit difference in the music around this place. And then we have Chris McGee, who is in orientation for his new job. So they're showing him where his office is and how to find the bathroom and what he needs to do if he has a problem with another student, coworker, and all that kind of good stuff. So we hope Chris is having a good time over there at Fox. We wish him the best with his new job, and hopefully he'll be able to get back here soon. Brandon, you can hang on there for a few more minutes with us?
Sure.
All right. Be right back. The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. More to come. Just a second. Chris Poole from Florida State coming up. Some people have to learn. All right, welcome back in the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. If you want to interact with us during the week, the Net Live / Facebook, facebook.com/thenetlive or thenetlive@gmail.com is how you can do it. Or you can give us a call, 347-677-1525. We have our next guest on the line, Brandon Rosenthal, the man from a little bit closer to your neighborhood than mine, but he took over the Florida State program in 2008. They were on a slide. They were floundering a little bit, hadn't had a 20-win season in a very long time. He took them to 20 wins in 2008. And then in 2009, put down a school record, 31-3, and a trip to the Elite Eight, earning himself ACC and Regional Coach of the Year. His team currently is on a 15-game winning streak, just ahead of Florida State and the Seminoles, the Seminole Ladies. Please welcome to Net Live, Chris Poole. Chris, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Man, you've done some incredible things down there with your program. Just give us a feel for what your goals were when you joined the program. I can't imagine your goal was 31-3 in your second year. That had to exceed anything you had expected.
It certainly did. We came in here wanting to build a good program. I was very lucky that I was able to bring both my assistants with me, so we really had a plan already together and had built the Arkansas program up. Actually, I started it from ground level in 93, brought it up, and 10 of the 14 seasons there, finished second to the Gators. And, you know, it was to the point to where I was ready to move and try to have an opportunity to where I could build again, felt like I had that in me to do that, and wanted to be able to come and see what I could do at Florida State. And it just happens to be in the state of the team that was my biggest rival at Arkansas. And, you know, we've certainly have worked to try to build a good program here. There's a lot of things in place because the athletic program certainly was very successful already. Every program on campus was going to postseason except for volleyball. And so we felt like we could make that move to try to improve that image of the volleyball program.
Well, tell us about trying to make some of those moves and the goals that you had with athletes that you hadn't selected. I think that's always a delicate position for a new head coach coming in.
You know, it was a challenge a little bit, even just from the simple things of trying to get them to understand what we wanted day to day, you know, whether it was going to class or whether it was, you know, being at practice on time or the type of drills we're going to run. We were basically starting all over, and there was quite a few of them that were upperclassmen on the team, and so we were trying to break a different mentality. I even know one of our discussions early was talking about what we were going to do at Thanksgiving and trying to prepare for postseason. The girls were talking about the vacations they were going to take at Thanksgiving. So they were not used to thinking postseason. That was not something in their mind. So we really had to get them to focus on, you know, wanting to win, thinking about winning, and trying to prepare themselves every day to be champions. And so it was, you know, we were having to work on the mental and the physical when we first got here.
Brandon.
I'm here. You know, I'm sorry. Chris, I've known you for, you know, some time back in Arkansas, now to Florida State. One of the things that you've done well with and become the unofficial guru, so to speak, is your knowledge of the RPI and how to schedule for the upcoming year. And wanted to kind of bring you on and talk a little bit about that, especially as we kind of get down to the end and RPI becomes more and more prevalent in the conversation of who's getting into the tournament. And didn't know if you could kind of give us a framework of how the RPI works.
Well, you know, when I really, it was in the early 2000s that I realized that certain teams were getting in. You know, I would think I would have a good schedule, and you know, at the time I'm thinking wins is important, but I really got the understanding that it's the kind of wins that you get, that you still have to beat someone. You know, people talk about the RPI being high. Well, certainly you could schedule a schedule to where you could try to get the highest RPI possible, but if you don't play anyone, it's not going to mean anything. And so I think it's a combination. Sometimes I think people want to rely too much on the RPI, and at the same time, you can use it as a tool, knowing that the NCAA is going to look at that and try to use it for seeding and getting in purposes. And so what we will do is, you want to try to play teams certainly that are going to win a lot of matches. That's going to help your RPI because they, you know, 25% of it is your win-loss record. 50% of it is your opponent's win-loss record. And then another 25%
90% is your opponent's win-loss record. And knowing that, anytime we go out and we try to find teams, certainly we want to try to get teams that we believe are going to be successful within their respective conferences. Now, you know, you can schedule a lot of weak teams that win a lot of matches. That's not going to do you any good at the end, because you still have to come back and beat someone that's going to matter, that's in that top 50, in that top 25, to be able to give you credit some way. So you can only move up so far. You know, you can't just schedule that way and then expect to be successful. You've got to be able to have a balance there a little bit. And so we'll look at, you know, not necessarily going after top five. I tell people all the time that I'm not concerned necessarily about having to beat the number one team in the country, but we will focus a lot on trying to play teams that are maybe in that 8 to 9 range down to around the 40th range. So somewhere in that category is what we're going to look for. And from year to year, you know, try to pick the teams that we're predicting are going to be successful. That's another thing that can catch you sometimes, is that you can play a couple of teams that you may think in advance is going to be good, but as we know, we don't have control of what that team turns out being. We don't have control of our own team. And sometimes through injuries or graduation or transfers or whatever, you think you've got a good schedule, and it doesn't always turn out. So we try to make sure that we, you know, schedule based on tradition a little bit, and try to find teams that have a lot returning, that have been successful, and lock them into our schedule to try to help our RPI out. And certainly I think that is a key to what the NCAA is looking at. And as long as the NCAA is going to use the RPI as it is right now, then that's certainly a smart way to try to schedule.
Chris, and looking at that, the way you just described it, is this a situation where teams that are trying to come up and raise their level are going to be hampered because of their inability to schedule teams that would increase their RPI?
Sometimes it will. You know, sometimes you can get closed out to where you're trying to schedule some of the better teams, and there may be, you know, there may be schools that say, look, I don't need you. I don't need to schedule you. And I actually had that problem some when I first started, particularly at Arkansas, when we were a young program and getting started. Even in our third year there, we went to the NCAA tournament. In our fourth year, we upset Florida to win the SEC tournament. We were trying to go out there and schedule, but still was a young program. So people would look at us, and they certainly didn't feel they needed to try to help us out any, so they wouldn't necessarily schedule us at the time. And so it made it a great balance for us to try to go out and try to get the teams in order to schedule that we knew we needed. And I certainly appreciate some of the things that your, quote, mid-majors sometimes have to go through, to where they may be a legitimate program, but trying to get the big teams to play them isn't always easy, because the big teams may feel they've got everything to lose and nothing to gain out of it.
Well, now this year for you, let's get back to your program. And you feel like this is really your program. We've talked before on this program to a lot of coaches and about our theories that kind of the third year is where you really take ownership of your program, both from the athletes and the results. Is that true for you, or are you still looking at changing a bunch of stuff?
Well, I think right now, certainly every player on our roster right now is players that came in either with us or that we've brought in. There's one player that's left that had already been signed that is a senior this year, Rachel Morgan. Besides that, everyone on the roster is ours. We've brought them in. We still are in a little bit of process of building the program like we want to, but a lot of that has to do with the nature of recruiting right now. When you're recruiting 2 or 3 years out in advance, when you come into a program, a lot of those kids the next couple of years are already gone. You know, they've already committed somewhere. So you're having to look in advance to what you're going to do. Really, the 2012 class that we've gone after will be our first true class that we were able to come in, found them as ninth graders, started working with, you know, looking at them as 10th graders, trying to get them signed by or committed by the time they were juniors. That is what we consider really our first true class that we've been able to spend time with. The others, certainly we've been able to beat the bushes and try to find some great players, and that's one of the ways we've been able to build. But we really feel like the future now, you would be correct, 3 or 4 years, and I think that's because of recruiting, that it's going to take that long to really be able to get everybody in place like you really want to.
Good question. Coming off the chat board, how many ACC teams do you think will make the tournament this year?
You know, it's hard to say. The bottom of the ACC has come up drastically. You know, I think Brian Bunn has done an unbelievable job there at North Carolina State, beating Wisconsin earlier in the year. Of course, we see, you know, Wisconsin turn around and just knocked off Penn State, and Boston College going out and beating Utah this year.
Oh, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And then Utah, being able to go out, or Boston College going out and beating Utah this year, and even though Utah's not having a great season in the Pac-10, they're a good team, you know, but it just shows that, you know, there's some of our teams that are getting much better in the ACC. I certainly feel like we've got a great shot. I think Miami's had a great season. They've knocked off Pepperdine in Oklahoma and has a very good team, an experienced team. North Carolina that we just played this weekend has a very nice group of athletes. They're probably one of the better defensive teams in the country. Very well coached by Joe, and then Duke, of course, is always very good. And I think there's, you know, we've got two or three others that could break in there if they can get some wins here at the end to try to boost their resume a little bit up. But I think we're probably, I'd say three or four is probably as deep as most people would think it might go this year, but you've got, because the bottom is coming up, I think the future is very bright for the ACC because of the athletes that are even coming into the conference right now. A lot of the teams were pretty young this year, and I think it's going to bode well for the future.
Chris, I want to get you out of here on this. I want to ask you about something we were just talking about here on the program, and that is the focus on stuff off the court and the importance of taking time to be aware of some of the issues off the court as it relates to travel or training, but then also just doing something that has nothing to do with volleyball for the value of your team and the team concept. Is that something that you're keenly aware of? And if so, what are some of the things that you've done to further that effort?
Well, certainly. You're talking about if you're traveling on a weekend to go somewhere, some of the different things you may do to try to build some of that chemistry with your team?
Yeah, something you would do that's completely not volleyball related, but yet would reap benefits to your team, both in training and also in match preparation and play.
Well, we certainly, we believe a lot in the team spending time together, certainly, and you know, build that chemistry with the team in some way. I mean, off the court, our girls are spending time. Sand volleyball, for instance, is something we're starting now, and that's something that the girls have started taking an interest in. And I know during the summer played a lot of sand, and I think that built some, you know, that was some things that was different in the training that they had done in the past, and maybe some different interests for some of them. I think any time that, you know, you can have players that are doing some things off the court together, but maybe not necessarily indoor volleyball, but just spending time, I think can be beneficial for sure.
All right, Chris Poole, we appreciate the time you spent here with us, and we wish you good luck as you guys face Wake Forest and Duke coming up this week, and then Clemson, Georgia Tech, Miami to finish it off. We look forward to seeing your team in the tournament and see how far you can go.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Kevin.
All right. Chris Poole of Florida State. And we know he's got to get out there and go to practice and get some more of that.
Talking about practice.
Brandon, I wanted to bring up a note here about the Penn State situation before you go, just briefly, because I know you have practice as well. The Penn State situation is this, where there's accusations of an assistant coach being involved with the molestation of young children and the lack of reporting of that inside of the program. And I just wonder, Brandon, what you think the reaction will be inside of the broader context of the NCAA coaching staffs at all the different universities as it relates to reporting of incidents that are suspicious or perhaps outright criminal.
Well, I think, you know, just kind of from when I woke up this morning and looked on ESPN to, you know, right now, I think this thing's about to blow up. It's unfortunate, and there's no real way to tell who knew, who didn't know, and you know, it goes on. But in today's day and age, with the social media and everything about it, you know, and the media outlets really looking for, I hate to say dirt, but they're, you know, they just there's so much more out there. This is somewhat scary, and you know, I think it kind of goes, you know, when we took a look at campus safety, when the Virginia Tech you know, shootings went on. You know, the campuses and universities around the country had to take stock and ownership into what they're really doing. And it's a hard thing to look at, but I would imagine that the majority of them were not prepared for anything like Virginia Tech. You know, and so the same thing is going to happen here where, you know, a lot of universities are going to say, hold on, let's see what we've got in place for something. You know, we don't anticipate anything like this ever happening, but if it did, are we ready for this? And, I mean, you can just see already within a couple hours, the AD has resigned, the vice president has resigned, and this is sad stuff. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're into football or into college athletics. This stuff is, you know, this is kind of a, I mean, it truly is kind of bizarre, and I'm not really sure where this is going to go, to be honest with you.
You know, I think this is an issue that certainly everyone is having to deal with on a more upfront basis, because this kind of stuff has always happened. This is not new. This kind of stuff has been going on since there have been humans on the planet. And it's not right that it's going on. Certainly the reporting makes the end much more glamorous, is the wrong word, perhaps, I don't know, obvious or well-known is perhaps the best way to put it. But this is something that universities have to be cognizant of and I think deal with. And you bring up the Virginia Tech situation. And for me, the Virginia Tech situation is a little bit different. Because if you're going to plan for something like that, like the Virginia Tech situation, I think you have to plan to go out and get struck by lightning. What would be my plan if I went out the front door of my house today and got hit by a bolt of lightning? You can't plan for the irrational or unbelievable instance. I don't think the Penn State situation is that, but I'm tiring of the media and the expectation from the public, whoever that is, when the media gets all inflamed about some subject that, oh, they didn't plan for this. They didn't account for this risk. You can't account for every risk in everything. You can't account for everything that might happen when you have 30,000 students together on a campus. Can you account for the conduct that you're aware of an assistant coach with young children? Absolutely, you can account for that. So I see a little bit of differentiation between those two issues. But for me, having run camps for young kids and for women, for young girls, and having to have that thought in my head of, you know, if I touch this girl on the back to explain how to pass the ball, how can that be misconstrued? How can that be used against me in some sort of illicit proceeding? And believe me, I'm not saying the Penn State thing is illicit. I'm not comparing the two right now. I'm getting to a broader issue of the relationship between coaches and players. And Brandon, this I know is something that we've talked about on the show before, I think with you, or at least you and I personally have talked about, the relations between a male coach and female athletes, or even a female coach for the very few that there are for male athletes, that there are some issues there. And unfortunately, we're in a situation where rationality has kind of gone out the window. And you end up, me as a camp counselor in that role and camp owner, I end up thinking about, God, what can happen if I touch this girl on the back? And I don't like that on a personal level from that standpoint of, I can't touch this person on the back because it might be misconstrued. Or what are the consequences of touching somebody that way? It's disturbing to me that it's gotten to that level while we, at the same time, ignore some of the more obvious things that are going on, like the stuff at Penn State.
Well, I mean, again, I'm going to have to disagree. I don't know. I hate to say it's more obvious. I mean, I don't feel like delving into it because I really don't know all that's going in. And just to clarify what we're talking about, the Penn State incident has to do with one of the former football coaches.
Football, not issue. Right.
Yeah, you know, I think my... you're right. I mean, it's crazy that we have to. But we got to get over that. We do have to. We have to think about that. We have to be cognizant of that. I mean, that's the bottom line. We can sit here and say, oh, we wish it was, you know, the way back then. Too bad. It's not. You know? And because of that, or because of the way we are or where we are in today's day and age, we've got to accept that responsibility. And so, I don't know. I can't say that this is, you know, something that is on the forefront. I mean, it's truly something, like I said, without knowing all the facts, I mean, it seems a little cloudy right now. And sure. I just think it's a shame. that, you know, this stuff in any situation is going on, but it's really, I truly believe this is going to blow up, and it quite possibly could affect a legacy of Jopa, and I don't know what, you know, there's a lot of questions what he knew, and you know, obviously this coach was a friend of his, and you know, he was on his staff, but man, oh man, I mean, you hate to have somebody like that who's the all-time winningest coach, you know, in his particular sport go out in a way that is just kind of, I don't even know how to call it. I mean, it's, I really wouldn't want to be anywhere close to it right now.
From nothing that he did, and he did report it, but did not take further action as the reports we're hearing now. But certainly, as you mentioned, Brandon, the facts will come to the surface, but not before it dominates the talk radio of the world of sports for the next however long, until the next crisis comes along. Hey, a little note about something we talked about earlier, Lauren Cook. She was suspended for this past weekend's matches, according to an article here that I'm looking at Washington Post Sports, that she was suspended there. And there is a report in there that she was scared and that her license had been suspended back on October 3rd. So who knows? Again, another issue where a lot of the facts will come out as time goes on.
Brandon, on a side note of that, you know, you got to give credit to their backup setter, Bridget Root, and their team, you know, for going out and performing. And you know, that's not an easy thing to do, especially this late in the year. So that's why this is a team sport. And, you know, whether it's injuries or mishaps like this, you know, it's important. And that's why, and we've talked about this, the engaging of each one of your players from number one to number 15 is so important, especially come, you know, late in the year. So credit to her and, you know, what Bridget Root has had to do, you know, jump in there. I'm sure she's more than capable of setting balls and, you know, and running the offense, or else she wouldn't be there.
Absolutely. Next woman up in this case. Talk about a popular phrase right now in the world of football. Hey, another note, a couple of great emails sent out by Eric Rockel and Mark Nalavanko. A couple of guys who said, hey, we were promised beach schedules by middle of October by a couple of beach entities. That would be IMG and NVL, and we have not gotten those. Gentlemen,
oops.
We will see what we can find out about the fact that there are no beach schedules yet. I'm personally not surprised. There's no way they can sort it out in that amount of time. I mean, you'd like to think they could, but if we get them by Christmas, I'm going to be impressed, because these are entities all fighting for the same space, same sponsors, same events, same everything. It can't possibly get sorted out easily in a month after the season, in my opinion. Brandon, thanks for joining us. We know you have practice. We appreciate you sitting in on the Net Live once again and giving your opinions on a variety of different issues.
Glad to be fifth in the rotation.
Hey, you're still
that's
in
right.
You remember that.
You got to have your number five starter. I mean, and typically that's the guy that
that's
wins
right.
the series. So, you know, I'm happy to be a part of the team.
Next man up. You were the one who saved the show today. Good for you. Good for you. Save the list.
Thanks again.
Out and a half of Barnett alone. So you saved somebody from a lot of heartache and problems.
Thanks again, man.
All right. We'll see you, Brandon.
Later.
Get your work done. All right. Brandon Rosenthal heading out from Lipscomb University there in Nashville. I will be appearing next week there for the ASUN Championship Banquet, getting an opportunity to see Brandon in person, good friend of mine, and also be a part of that event. We hope that you can be a part of what we are doing here on the Net Live. Unfortunately, we missed Louisville. We had a mishap right after last week's show, and we're unable to attend Louisville, but rest assured, the relationship with Louisville is there. That event will eventually occur there in Louisville, probably next year, preceding the Final Four, which will be held at the University of Louisville. So for those that were expecting to hear the show last week, we're sorry. There were some emergencies that had to be dealt with. No one's dead or horribly injured, but some things that had to be dealt with, and we're going to be moving on from that. But we're continuing to try and expand the world of the Net Live and get out there to different places. We will be at convention. If you're a coach out there, going to be at convention, want to come by. If you're a fan, going to be at convention San Antonio. Beautiful time of year to be in San Antonio. If you live up in the upper Midwest, we know it's just getting cold, and certainly from our experience last year in December in Kansas City, it's plenty cold there. Feel free to make a trip down to San Antonio and hang out on the Riverwalk and come see us at the AVCA convention and Final Four. We will be doing at least one long show, perhaps two this year. where we have lots of different people we drag in and talk to them about convention, about their programs, about the Final Four, about women's volleyball, about volleyball in general. Really turns out to be a fun event where nowhere else can you drag in so many people from the sport, especially in the United States, who matter to the sport of volleyball in the United States. Really an incredible place. So get out there and do it. It's going to be, I think it's December 15th through the 19th in conjunction with the Final Four down in San Antonio. We want you to be there. And we want you to communicate with us before that, thenetlive@gmail.com or facebook.com/thenetlive. Had some great conversations going around this past week on the Facebook page. Lots of fun stuff from our fans and friends. Want a big thanks to Chris Poole of Florida State for coming on the program, and also Rich Kern, Mike Sonheimer, Holly McPeak, Brandon Rosenthal. Thanks for making the show. And we will see you again next week. Geeter claims he's going to be here, but it's another week, so you've got to tune in to see if he's actually going to show up. So for everyone in the NetLive family, I'm Kevin. Have a great week. We'll see you next one. The NetLive, out.